Welcome to this special Italian wine podcast broadcast. This episode is a recording off Clubhouse, the popular drop-in audio chat. This Clubhouse session was taken from the Wine Business Club and Italian Wine Club. Listen in as wine lovers and experts alike engage in some great conversation on a range of topics in wine. If you enjoy listening, please consider donating through ItalianWinePodcast.com. Any amount helps cover equipment, production, and publication costs. And remember to subscribe and rate our show wherever you tune in.
Welcome, everybody. My name is Stevie Kim. We'll get started in just a minute so that everyone can settle in. Okay, almost time. So my name is Stevie Kim, and thank you for joining us today. It's really tricky here on Clubhouse to get just the right time slots. So we've been running mostly 2 p.m. on Wednesdays like today and 8 p.m. on Thursdays, both Central European time. If any of you would like to organize in your own time zone under the two clubs, you know, whether it's Italian wine or wine business, please feel free to do this by joining our club. I've been personally organizing a couple of rooms. I see some familiar faces in the room ever since I joined about 2 months ago. And I'm a fan, despite all the, you know, discussions that are going on nowadays. There are other members who've been organizing rooms under the club, like Hugh Priest. He broaches Italian wine on Mondays. Shawen and Lan also started some rooms in Chinese, and a few others have Renee. Renee also hosted a room as well. And if you'd like to be updated about the next room schedule, please do follow us. You can do this by tapping on the greenhouse button up there, or alternatively, tap on the two avatars with the wine glasses on my profile at the bottom, and that should lead you to the clubs. In addition, if you think this room today could be interesting to somebody, someone, you can ping them in by tapping the plus button on the bottom right-hand corner. This room is being hosted by Wine Business, where we try to broach different wine markets. We've done China, we've done Russia, Japan, Korea, and today we'll be broaching Africa. My wine business ideas in general, that's what we try to do at Wine Business Club. Today we will be addressing the lesser known wine market to many. Africa, I think it's safe to say that most of us know very little to nothing. So I'm very much looking forward to this. That's it for now for housekeeping. Tomorrow, please don't forget to join us tomorrow, where we will be chatting up with VIA, Vinitaly International Academy faculty members, Sarah Huller, Master of Wine, and Henry DeVise. Some of you may know, they are our faculty members for Vinitaly International Academy. And if you would like to get any information about that, tomorrow is a good time. That's 8 p.m. Central European time. So let's get this started. Just as a quick reminder, as always, this room will close in 1 hour time. So, welcome Timmy, welcome Tinashe. Hi, you guys. Oh, I know you see Lan, but that's really Timmy because Timmy is still without an iPhone. Ciao, Tinashe.
How are you?
Hi. Is Timmy on?
Yes, I am here, too.
Okay, great. So Timmy's being connected through Lan. Let's start with Timmy. His name is Akintola Timmy Tope. I hope I said that correctly. Timmy, please correct me.
It's fine. You got it right. Spot on.
It's close enough. Started his first business in Nigeria at the age of 17. And the business grew until it ran up against regulatory difficulties. And so Timmy moved to Korea as an engineer in the oil and gas industry as of 26, and then he moved to Italy, and I actually met him because he was doing Bologna Business School. So I teach there, and we also host some of the students sometimes. And I got a chance to meet him and work with him and his group studies. So, and as well as Lan also did the MBA at Bologna Business School. So that's kind of the connection, love connection there. And then he also came to Italy, and he now is an area manager for Africa. So he specialized in Africa for Zoni in 1821. So I think he has a lot of insight into the market. So my first question to you, Tammy, it's kind of broad, but how can you define Africa wine market? Like, what does it mean to you? Can you just kind of give us a small overview as a start point?
Interesting. Thank you very much, everybody. Thank you, Stevie, for the opportunity. How do I define Africa's wine market? I like to look at it as the wine market for the future, particularly the future of the business. If you think that in 2050, Africa will house about 25% of the world's population, the turbulence you see now will disappear. People will move to Africa. Westernization will become more rapid, will grow at a rapid pace. The poverty level will dissipate. Yes, then that's the wine market of the future. If you've got 25% of the world living there, that's the market. Now, what we don't understand when we talk about Africa is we think 2050 is a long time. 2050 is in 29 years. It's not in a long time. If this continent is going to house 25% of the world population in 29 years, we should take it serious by now. Africa is also creating the world's largest single market with the African Continental Free Trade. So it's like having a free trade zone in the whole of Africa. That's the world largest. The value currently is about $4 trillion US dollars in spending. We expect to have a spending of $4 trillion. And this is supposed to launch in 30th of May, this is 2 months' time. Well, we understand with the COVID, the dates might be moved forward, going forward. Africa's wine market means dynamism to me. Now, no two countries in Africa spend the same currency, even if they go by the same name. Kenya has got the Kenyan shillings. Uganda also has the Ugandan shillings. The value different, very different. No two countries speak exactly the same language. The Swahili spoken in some part of Kenya, in Kenya, is different, has some tonal difference from the one spoken in other parts of Africa. So it's a lot of dynamism today. You have to go back to the drawing board every time and tweak your formula. The government in Africa changes their mind every second. So that's some dynamism you have to deal with. And there's complexity. Because of the dynamism, it's also complex. You need to find the best way to communicate with every market. Treat every market as singular. People say Africa. People react to Africa like it's a country. Understand that it's a continent consisting of 54 countries. So it is very complex. And then it's vibrant. It's also a vibrant market, a market that puts you on your toes every day due to the fact that the changes in your logistics every day, changes in government policies, changes in the market spend, changes everywhere. A few last year, for border-bound countries or like Uganda and Rwanda, where you don't have the waterways, so you have to ship everything through Kenya to the port of Mombasa. Now, most of the guys that play in Kenya, Uganda, Rwanda have bonded warehouses where they keep the goods going to Uganda and Rwanda. Uganda is a big wine market, the big wine market there. Now, all of a sudden, the government in Kenya decides to stop the bonded warehouse facilities, so you can't bond products going to Uganda anymore. Nobody saw that coming. So it's a market that's very vibrant. And finally, it's a market that means sales. You sell. There's always something to sell in Africa. I mean, this defines Africa's wine market.
So Temi, I was wondering, can you, you know, so Africa is not one market, like it's in a way similar to China and United States, if you will, they're different states. But can you, like in China, for example, the most important markets are, of course, Shanghai, Beijing, and then Guangzhou, to a certain extent, also Chengdu. Could you possibly also give us, like, in terms of priority, in terms of market size, which countries would be, you know, the most prominent, most important when we're talking about Africa wine market? Of course, one that comes to my mind is South Africa. It's very well developed also because it produces a lot of wine. What are the other African countries?
Okay, so thank you. Very, very relevant question. So what I like to do when looking at the route to market for wineries is first to understand what the product is. South Africa might look like a developed market, but it might also be your biggest nightmare if you produce a product similar to what the South Africans produce. Number one, you won't be able to compete in terms of price. Number two, they have an outstanding quality that nobody talks about. So it would be difficult for you to compete. But usually, if you want to go blind on your product categorization and the product type, I would like to split the continent into four parts. If I take North Africa, it's always best to start with Morocco. Morocco is like the Dubai of North Africa. It's a free market. You can go from Morocco to other parts of Northern Africa. Well, except the part that you've got these Islamic states and then you're not allowed to sell alcohol, like Libya. And Egypt, you're also not allowed to sell alcohol. So you can start with Morocco in the north, and then you can spread your tentacles around the north. When you come to the west, the biggest market is Nigeria, but it's also the most difficult market. So it's always best, I advise people always to start from Ghana. It's the next big thing in West Africa, but then it's easier to penetrate. Bureaucracy is not so high. People know wines already. People love wines already. You can easily get the wines to the people, and then you'll be fine. In East Africa, you would always have to start from Kenya. It's where you've got the sea line, the sea border, so you could always get the wine in from Kenya. And from Kenya, you could go all around East Africa. It's practically easy to do. Wine knowledge is up in Kenya. They've got a vibrant online wine purchase idea, and that works very well. And in Southern Africa, it would always be South Africa. As long as you have products there, you can easily explain to the people, and then you can come up with your niche market in South Africa. And from South Africa, the logistics is always easy to get into every other part of the SADC. That's the Southern African development. So those are like the four nodal markets that I like to propose to people interested in playing in Africa.
Okay, that's grand, because that's a good, you know, it's good for us to have kind of a basic structure of the Africa wine market. So, Timmy, I'm going to come back to you because we have several more questions. But I'm going to go to Tinashe now. Welcome, Tinashe. Ciao, Tinashe.
How are you? Welcome, welcome.
Everyone. Hi.
How are you doing?
Okay, great. Where are you now?
I'm in Harare, Zimbabwe. So I came yesterday.
Zimbabwe.
Yeah, yesterday afternoon. But I'm based in Johannesburg, South Africa.
Okay. So for those of you who are unfamiliar with his name, he is a very up-and-coming sommelier, Tinashe. His complete name is Tinashe Nyamudoka. How do you say that?
Nyamudoka.
He's a Som, but he's more importantly, he is a founder. He's the founder of Kumusha Wines. He's been written about all over the place. He has his wine diploma from Cape Wine Academy, level 3 WSET. He also has graduated from University of Cape Town. And he did some judging also with the certificate from Michael Friedhan Academy. And I guess for the past decade, he's been a very common name to the South African fine dining establishment, including one and only Hotel Cape Town, the Oyster Box Hotel Durban. We've been taking some notes. Test Kitchen Cape Town, and he also serves as an independent wine judge and in the local wine competitions to Munda Spini in Germany. He's also a partner at Some On Call, an online wine buying platform based in South Africa. So a very, very good person to refer to. So my first question to you, Tinashe, is what are the biggest challenges making and selling wines in Africa? I guess this is, yes, another big question. And I would also like to ask the audience, if you have any questions, please raise your hand and I will bring you up to the stage after our first round of questions, one by one. Thank you, Tinashe.
Oh, thank you for the platform. Maybe I'll just give a broad overview like Temi did, and he touched on a very good points. And in terms of the wine market, he's probably touched more on east to north, but I know more probably from east going down as well. And up there, I know Uganda is a big growing wine market, Rwanda as well. Kenya, I fully support, I think, probably the biggest in East Africa. Then you have down here, South Africa, which is consumption-wise is still big, but you got to also realize that it's making its own wine. So most of the wine consumed in South Africa is actually being made in South Africa. And in terms of Africa as a general, I think it's time to like split it up and seeing the consumer trends and what's really driving up the wine consumption and demand. And most of it has to do with Africans going to live abroad, study abroad, and really coming back and trying to find, you know, what they're drinking abroad and introduce it back to Africa. So I think that's one big mover which is happening. And also because, you know, in some countries, the middle income is getting a bit much more to spend, getting lots of exposure, especially on social media. And what's also important is the almost like the food renaissance coming through in Africa, you know, rediscovering our own cuisine and trying to like talk about it and put it on the global map. And, you know, with food, you also want wine. So there's this renaissance in trying to come up with African-inspired dishes, and most of the chefs have worked abroad and coming back as well. So you've got that culture of eating out, drinking, which was never there before in Africa. But my main worry is the communication of that subject. I think that's where the problem is really. And in terms of production-wise, obviously South Africa is the main producer in Africa. Other countries are doing like Zimbabwe, but it's really, really insignificant. And to produce, quite easy, but to sell into Africa, a bit of a challenge on a logistics point of view, and obviously different governments and taxation. You know, it's especially in Kenya, Rwanda, I know it's quite difficult as well. But like Temi was saying, in Southern Africa, because South Africa is pretty much close to in the SADC, so the ease of doing business, like I'm in Zimbabwe now. Maybe one thing you forgot to mention, I started my own wine brand called Kumusha Wines, which I produce in South Africa, but now selling in a growing market like Zimbabwe, Kenya, Ghana, and shortly I'll be in Rwanda as well. But what I've been encompassing is just the logistics part. It's still difficult to get wines from SA to Kenya, through Mombasa. It's just the logistics part, and obviously the pricing, because it ends up being very expensive, non-competitive. So I think in general, the African market still dominated by South Africa because of it being Africa, and big companies like Distell and KWV had networks which really had spread the wines throughout there. So you pretty much going to find Niederberg wine, a KWV wine, and brandies from the same companies. And I think that's where the opportunity is, because this African being educated is starting to look for, you know, different products, even going looking beyond South Africa and knowing that there's wines in Europe, especially Prosecco is really doing big in Africa. Champagne, probably, you know, outside of South Africa, Nigeria is the biggest consumption as well. So there are opportunities in there. But the main hurdle is just the politics and getting past the logistics stuff. And you have to find a nice, solid partner to work with that can take you throughout. And obviously, you have to invest much more on the educational side and just the marketing side.
So you just touched on the partners bit. By the way, I did say your winery, Kumusha, but I guess my pronunciation sucks, so you should correct me. And I know, and maybe if we have time, we can talk a little bit about that, because you did talk about your winery also at Wine to Wine, and I was fascinated by, you know, the success. It's a success story, if you will, for Africa. But how do you, when you said that you need to find a local partner, how do you go about doing that, and how can you tell if is a someone who you can trust? Can you kind of give me like what the market, if I were a producer, okay,
yes,
approaching Africa for the first time, I want to investigate for the first time if I can actually sell my wine, if there's a market for my type of wines, what do I do? How do I seek out this local partner?
I think you have to zoom in and see. For specific, for me, Zimbabwe has always been one of the biggest places I wanted to do businesses in. And when I entered it, I had to find someone who had done business in Zim before, someone who was showing growth. And especially if they're importing from South Africa, you want to make sure how their distribution channel is. So for specific, the importer I got to get in Zimbabwe, they bring their own stuff, they own some retail shops, they own restaurants. So it kind of made it easy partnership, because all the gaps were stopped. So you just don't want someone who brings the wine, then they have to find the customer. So I think in each and every country, you've got those importers who have a direct control in retail and restaurants and distribution. Or in South Africa, maybe it's easy to find out. You can find out all these guys. But in terms of like we were saying, South Africa is a big producing country, but the consumption is mostly local, and it's difficult to compete with foreign wines in South Africa. I worked in restaurants and I worked in hotels. It was quite so difficult being a wine destination. But you do get small importers who really carve their niche in the market, and mostly servicing private clients, big retailers who are bringing the wines themselves, like Checkers or Pick and Pay. But my suggestion would be, you know, find a key figure in each and every country you're going into. You pretty much know who's running the business in there, and you know, just work it on a much more win-win relationship of trying to find and understand. Which I say is pretty much difficult from the outside. But case in point, I think that's why we're doing this initiative. So if you come to me, I now more or less know who's running the industry in South Africa, who's running it in Zimbabwe, how is it in Kenya, how is it in Rwanda. So I think, yeah, it has to be a people's person and referrals.
I'm going to go back to Timmy with more or less the same question. Timmy, are you on? So I know, how long have you been working for Zunin?
I didn't hear that. Can you come again with that?
Yeah, how long have you been, how many years have you been working with Zunin?
4 years now.
Okay, so before you joined the company, were they already present in Africa?
Yes, we had about 3 or 4 countries before I joined Zunin.
So since you've joined, I'm imagining it has grown exponentially in Africa. How did you go about growing the business, the developing the business? What was your strategy? Without giving away too many secrets, how did you, like, what was your approach to Africa in terms of wine potential market?
Okay. So now we have a presence in about 27 countries of Africa. So yes, you're correct by saying the business has grown exponentially. The approach was to take each country as a single country. Just take one country after the other. Find out best how to communicate with the market. As Tinashe has hinted on, communication is very key. So I visited the market. The first rule for me is go to the supermarket and see what's happening. See what turns. see what kind of presence, go to the hotels and see what's happening there, see what food the people eat, try to get into that wine education space, try to hold an event at some one of the hotels, let the chefs, work with the chefs there, and let's see how they match your their food with your Amarone, with your Vapodicellari Passo, with your Suave. Let them see how they match that. If it appeals to the people would look for the wine. But it's very important to find out how best to communicate the wine. That's something that we have failed to do, you know. I shadowed the industry for quite a while, and I saw what the Chilean wines were doing. It's difficult to find much Chilean wines in South Africa, so I'm not sure if Tinashe also sees this trend in South Africa. But in other parts of Africa, and that's due to the fact that the tax on Southern American wine, or on American wines generally, is much higher than that on Italian, on European wine going into South Africa. So it makes it difficult to sell. It's heavily taxed. But what the Chilean wines did is they came up with the Wines of Chile, which is a very prominent organization in Africa. And they went about with about 10, 15, 20 wineries. And they held this event, this quarterly event, in practically every West African country, did the same thing in East Africa, did the same thing practically in Southern Africa before they ran into the tax clause and all that. And that way, you've got 20 wineries, you've got 15 wineries exhibited at one spot. Everybody flocks to that area. The chefs come, they try to merge it with your food. You taste the food, you taste the wine, you think it's a good go, and then you don't... You go to the supermarket and you buy that wine because you had it the other day and it tasted nice and it blends very well with your food. It's not just about putting the wines on the supermarket and expecting the wines to sell it. No. And as you rightly pointed it out, the tax, you've got a tax haven for Southern African wines in Africa, in SADC. So why would anybody want to buy another white wine from any other part if I can get a fantastic Chenin Blanc at practically half the price? Until you make them understand what the wine is, how the wine pairs with their food, how you can have the wine on a daily basis for their dinner. It's not just about putting the wine there and putting it in one hotel or one restaurant. People don't go to the restaurants and the hotels every day, but people do eat dinner every day. People eat lunch and breakfast every day. Well, I didn't expect you to drink a bottle of wine with breakfast, but at least dinner. People eat dinner every day at their homes. So you need to be able to communicate it in a way that this wine is here, it's for you, and you can have it every day with your meal, not only when you go to the restaurant. That's practically where we as Italian wineries, a lot of Italian wineries have missed it. Very keen on partnering with the hotels and the restaurant and directly to the supermarket, but not keen on people tasting the wine. We should focus more on people tasting the wine, experiencing the wines with their local delicacies. That's what's going to be the change. Now, about the question you asked, Tinashe, about finding a local partner, I just want to put in a few points. Now, what I did, how we expanded from 4 to 28, I've practically not been to all those countries, is if you get a request from a partner or from somebody that claims to sell wine in Africa, why don't you ask for a business plan? Why don't you ask for an insurance cover? Call one of the insurance companies and ask, could you put an insurance behind this company? If they say yes to it, then the company is credible. If the insurance partner tells you no, then there's something fishy somewhere. Ask them for a business plan and find out what other company they work with. If you sell wine, I'm sure my wine is the first wine you'll be selling. You must have sold something from somebody else before. So find out who they're working with, who they're already working with. Put a call to that other winery and say, oh, we've got a request from this winery, this distributor somewhere in Africa. They say they work with you. Is that true? Is that valid? What's the payment terms? This way, it's easier, it's faster. You don't have to visit every market. You don't have to become a globetrotter and trot everywhere in Africa to get this done. Once you get the business in, obviously you have to visit the market. Obviously you have to grow the business. Obviously you have to do tastings and seminars and all that. But to get started, it's easier. It's just about you getting the right information, meeting with the right insurance company, talking to the other partner companies, and it's a go.
Great. Thank you so much for sharing that with us, Temi. And we'll definitely get back to you. I have a few additional questions for both of you, but let me get welcome Pasquale. Welcome Pasquale. Have you got a question for one of our panelists?
Yes, thank you, Stevie. Maybe Tinasha answered part of the question I had for Akitola, but it's not the first time I hear that the main issue in Africa is really that communication and education. I was involved in an attempt to create an app that, you know, would educate staff in Kenya and Ethiopia a couple of years back. But I was wondering, according to Akitola or Tinashe for that matter, what would be the media where the wine person or the consumer or a staff person, a waiter, would be more receptive? So what, in other words, what media would work for them? Is it the traditional social media, or, you know, Tinashe was talking about organizing events, but what, according to your opinion, would really work and be the most effective way how to communicate wine and how to educate about wine in Africa?
Yeah, I would say, you know, most parts of Africa now are easily connected on the internet via social media. So I've been doing quite a lot using the social media tools, and now Zoom is coming into fray, and like really starting these wine programs. Like I've started a digital wine program where, you know, I get students to sign up as well. So I think it's also important to kind of categorize the wine education. You know, there's a lot of growing waiters and people from Africa wanting to study wine to go and work abroad, especially in the cruise ships. Then you get this wine education for consumers who don't want to understand wine. They just want to understand their taste and what to eat it with and what not to eat it with. What I found interesting was using also social media, especially on the fun part, the consumer education, and working a lot with chefs, because the chefs on their own, they've got this huge following of people trying to do these African recipes, and I've just been plugging in with the wine to make it much more sense and complete, and make them more comfortable about their decisions and make them more open about selecting wine. So I would say the traditional social media works if you can come up with curated wine courses. And the in-person tastings and trainings, I won't stress them enough, because I've just said I'm in Zimbabwe now for a whole month, and I'm just here for this specific meet every restaurant, meet every hotel, meet every private client, do wine tastings, wine education, wine and food dinners. That will always work. And if you spend time in the market, it will always work as well.
Does Temi want to reply? When you say traditional social media, what do you mean? Do you mean Facebook, Instagram? Are there different types of social media channels, like in China or Russia, for example?
I find the growing consumer who's really drinking wine at the moment in Africa is probably pretty much active on Instagram, on Twitter. And for certainly LinkedIn, that's where you're finding this professional exposed who are really drinking wine. Facebook is much more the old guard, and those ones really don't drink much wine. It's probably a bottle every 3 days. But the crux of it, where I'm seeing the eyeballs going, definitely Instagram, Twitter heavily, if you get your content right, suited to the platform, and definitely LinkedIn as well.
Would Timmy like to comment on social media?
Yes. Just going back to the initial question from Pasquale, I think Tinashe has said a lot about it. I just wanted to chip in something. So currently working with Zodi in 1821, I've got a portfolio that price range spans from less than 10 euros, about 5 euros for bottle, to about 100 euros for bottle. So, this, given the range, given what you're about to sell or what you're selling, would determine how best to communicate. Put an eye on your portfolio and just give it a look and see what exactly you're selling. If I'm selling the products about 5 euros at 12 and all that, yes, it would be nice to go social media, it would be nice to go Instagram and try to get that mass market, try to get that millennial going in the drinking market. But once I get to the level of I'm trying to sell something at a particular price, I'm reading 30 euros, 40 euros, 50 euros, I try as much as possible to just keep it niche. Because it's a niche wine. I don't want to water down the brand. I don't want to ruin the brand reputation. It's very niche. So let's just try to keep it to the hotels, to the restaurants that I know that they've got that niche membership. I just keep it within there. And to me, that's just how to navigate that. Else, you might start to do a lot of harm to the brand rather than actually helping the brand. So it's very important to look at what you're selling. And then look at what market, who are the people buying it. For example, I sell most of my iron wine at the Polo Club. I sell a lot of it at the Polo Clubs and places like that. When you've got this 60-year-old, 50-year-old people staying in Europe for about 5, 10 years earlier when I was younger, knows the wine, knows the style of the wine, understands the style of the wine. They come there to relax in the evening and all that. It's an easy sell. To me, understand the wine, you need to understand what you're selling first and how you want to communicate it before you go on the channel to communicate it on.
So I have kind of a follow-up on the social media. By the way, if anybody from the audience would also like to come up to the stage, please raise your hand. This is a good time for you to do that. I have a follow-up on the social media question. Are there such things as wine influencers in Africa? I know it's a huge differentiated market as well. If they're also, are they more like Instagrammers or are they more celebrities? What can you give me like the top five wine influencers in your opinion?
Yeah, maybe I'll jump on that. I think if you have to say wine influencers, I doubt it. I think it's still, especially in South Africa, it's still a catchy subject because wine hasn't been in there. So probably it's just wine consumers glorifying wine on the Instagram page. But what I would say is, I think, first of all, what I would really advise is that Africa is still price sensitive, you know. So work yourself. If you, what you need to do first is to get a partner, then get the product on the ground. And find the perfect partner, work with them, like working backwards and strive to get them first what they can sell, then build up the portfolio from that. I still feel there's a need for high-end and value wines, but the business structure is that's from this lower end, and it's still price sensitive in terms of dollar terms. I would say an average of retail price here in Zimbabwe, I'm seeing $5 on the shelf. And prices can go up to $100 on the shelf. But the gist of it, if you can try to land on a retail space, a bottle of wine to Africa, the sweet spot is probably between $5 to $12. There you can push volumes. Then you can always build from there with the relationship you've established. And in terms of social media influences, I think better not even look at the wine influencers. Look at the big social influencers, big musicians in Nigeria that really driving up sales. Food chefs. There's some food chefs having a lot of huge following. I'll see if you can post something. I'll give you a few. I don't have on the top of the head, but I'm following them. But I can drop them and we can easily share. But I'm thinking the best way is to identify the cultural movers, you know, the ones with the voice, the outspoken. And there's this lady who just popped up in Kenya. She just does comedy, but she's got a big following, and try to plug in there. That's how you're gonna get it. But if you're just gonna get a wine influencer and feel that someone is just gonna talk about your wine, it's really not gonna work. I think Africa needs a cultural movement. So if you identify, it doesn't matter whichever cultural field or arts field it is, as long as they're voicing or trying to voice their cultural Africanness, those are the best partners to work with, because wine can always fit in anyhow. If it's a chef, they're cooking with it. If it's a cultural influencer in music, they're drinking it in video. So I wouldn't say look at wine influences per se, but just look for cultural influences.
Timmy, would you like to chime in?
Yeah, I think that Tinashe practically nailed this. It's all about cultural influences, wine influences. The guys that have been to wine school, sommeliers, WZ123, practically have a following of about 2,000 people on Instagram or on social media or whatever platform they claim to have. So what's the point? What's the point of getting that guy at the bottom of your wine if he's just going to show himself off to about a followership of about 2,000 people, you know? So it's to understand what the move is in the market. But nevertheless, you need to also understand what you're trying to sell. So maybe that guy with 2,000 people followership has got the people that really understand wine and would appreciate the quality that you're bringing to the table. Maybe you also don't need to sell more than 2,000 bottles of your wine. It's fantastic. That's the guy you need. But if you're looking at the mass market, the big market itself, it's all about cultural shifters, cultural shakers. Nigeria is very known for its entertainment and the music industry. One of those guys got a followership of about 100 million people. That's the guy you want to put your bottle of wine, the bottle of wine you've targeted for the mass market. That's the guy you want to put it in the cans. You want to take a picture with that bottle. South Africa is known for its rugby. You want to see the captain of South African rugby team to have your bottle of wine, you know. So it's all about the cultural shift, and every region has its own cultural space that you need to plug into if you really want to do that influence of business. You know, at the end of the day, it's all about your brand, not ruining the perception of your brand. I am quite wary. Being Nigerian myself, I've got some Nigerian artists that are my friends, and they wanted to take a picture of my bottle, send up a kid to them, and let's get this going. But I'm quite wary to do it there. Understanding that, number one, you've got this guy's got no wine knowledge. Number two, do I want this guy to be behind my brand? Because he's not a wine. So you need to balance that out. It's a gray area. I'm still very wary about it. But it's a very gray area in Africa right now. So something that will take some time to develop.
Great, thank you, Timmy. So Lan, who is also the amazing, he's bridging the call from Timmy, who is also his same alma mater from Bologna Business School. Lan, you had a couple of questions for Tinashe and Timmy. This is kind of a good time for you to ask.
Thank you, Stevie. Thank you, Timmy and Tinashe. In fact, I want to just to understand, like, roughly how much you have to pay in Africa for quality bottle of wines, and which kind of wines are popular there, because, you know, there are so many different types of wines, but which one do you think particularly pair well with the local food?
Prices vary, yeah. Yeah, prices vary, you know. Like I was saying, on a lower end, on average, you know, the cheaper, easy drinking wine are landing on the shelves around $5 to $7, US dollars, that is. And in terms of spending, you know, your big brands like Champagne, I'm saying, there's a lot of, obviously, COVID has come and hit, but just pre-COVID, there was a lot of champagnes being drunk in Africa, celebrating clubs. But on the other higher-end market, you must remember also there's a lot of, what do you call this in English, embassies, wine embassies and expatriates who are willing to pay, you know, $500 bottle of wine, whatever they can find in Africa, usually in small clubs. So I would say it varies from, you know, $5, $7 on the shelf. A lot of those ones in the middle, $30 to $50 are there. Then there's a market for, you know, endless market for champagnes. I wouldn't say the higher end red wines, you know, the Fifth Grolls or, you know, Super Tuscans. There is obviously definitely not much of them here, but there is a niche market who can pay for that. But I would say definitely champagne and Prosecco. And Prosecco, you know, from the cheapest to the expensive, is really doing well here. And in terms of food and wine pairing, like I say, you know, Prosecco, easy light reds, work with most African dishes. Up north, obviously, there's a lot of chili and spice, so sparkling wine would work down there. Southern Africa is more salty, savory, so white wines really work well. I see a lot of Portuguese wines being drunk. The Vinho Verde is very favorite of many. And some Italian Pinot Grigios are very easily common and easy to pair with African foods as well. And yeah, one other country which needs to be on the radar as well, but obviously there's a bit of its agency, but I'm not sure if you know that there's big gas exploration in Mozambique. Total is investing heavily in there. There's a lot of a whole town of expatriates looking for wines that they used to, but they can't get access to. So I see that as a growing market as well.
Do Timmy want to chime in?
Yes. So about the price bracket, as Tanasha tried to highlight, it's quite dynamic. It's quite difficult to say. If land or if a producer asks me that question, I would ask you, what's your volume target? What amount of wine are you willing to, are you ready to sell? What do you really, how much do you want to sell? If you ask me that, I would ask you, what kind of wine do you have in your portfolio? What's your target line? So depending on what your target is, I can tell you what kind of what price bracket you should focus your product to, your the wine you got. So if you want to be on the supermarket and you want to move, the supermarket is practically about price. White is white, red is red, sparkling. That's the tricky part. But white is white, red is red. So if you want to sell white, if you want to sell red, then you should be about $5 and all that in that space. If you want to sell a red also in the supermarket, it'd be about $5 to $10 in that space. For the sparkling, in many markets, Prosecco is still not a category in Africa. Away from South Africa, where there's a big growing Prosecco knowledge, in most of the other markets, Prosecco is still not a category. So either champagne or the cheap sparkling wine. A lot of them come from Spain, a lot of them come from Chile. So either one of the two categories, either you're a champagne producer or a cheap sparkler. So that's the thing, that you need to be very cautious of this when you say, when you define what price brackets you want to play in. So be very cautious of what your product is, be very cautious of what market is. Every market is different in Africa. So it's really difficult when you want to characterize the African wine market. What exactly is the African wine market? That's 58 countries. So every market really is different. Some markets it's more white wine, some markets it's more red, some sparkling is fine, and all that. And because the markets are different, the price bracket also is different. Price market is also very different. The perception of the wine is also very different. There's practically a 25% price gap between a white wine and a red wine in Nigeria. In South Africa, it's practically equally lined. White and red cost about the same thing. So you see, it's very tricky. You first need to know what volume you're willing to do, and then you need to know where you're lined at, what market is of interest to you. Then we can have a discussion about what price bracket you want to
pick. Thank you, Timmy. I think our audience is a bit shy because we all feel a little bit, we don't know very much about Africa wine markets, so we are afraid, you know, what kind of questions to ask you. By the way, just as a note, if you'd like to get a little bit of a deeper dive into the wine culture in Africa, Timmy and Tinashe did a very interesting session at Wine to Wine in November, end of November. I thought it was a very good session, solid. And if you would like to get into that, it was called the Hacking the Wine Culture in Africa. So if you'd like to have a little more of them, I think it's a good place to go. We did streamline all of that and posted, we published it on Italian Wine Podcast. And I believe, let me see, it's episode 462. And you can find that on all of the podcast platforms. So if you would like to listen to them some more, both Tinashe and Temi, you can go to Italian Wine Podcast. Let me just quickly reset the room. We have two more people up on stage, so we'll have their turn for the question. We have about 11 more minutes, so if you like to ask, this is kind of will be kind of your last chance, so please raise your hand. Welcome, Renee. Have you got a question for our panelists?
I do have a question for the panelists, and I also wanted to thank everybody for their time today. This has been a really interesting conversation, and like Stevie was saying, it was really great to learn more about the wine market in the continent of Africa. Before I get to my question, I did have two recommendations for influencers. One is in Kenya. Her name is Mulongo Spice, Wine Spice. She does wine and food pairing. And the second one is down in South Africa, Wine with Tuwani. But my question is, I know that we talked in the beginning of the conversation about how South African wine is sold throughout the rest of the continent of Africa. So I was just curious as to how the South African wine bans had affected sales within the rest of the continent.
That's a great question. Let me just piggyback also on Renee. We've completely ignored this one word that's called COVID. So we did not address that at all today. If you can also address these two aspects, that would be grand. Let's start with Temi.
Yeah, so let me be sure I got Renee's question. She wanted to know how the wine ban, how the South African wine ban affected the industry, right? How the continent.
Yeah, because we had said, you guys had mentioned before that South African wine is exported into the rest of the continent. Yeah. So I just wanted to understand.
Okay, so what was the key take out of the South African wine ban? For me, going into the rest of the continent, it was quite difficult because usually before the ban, if you go to every hotel, every restaurant in major parts of Africa, the South African wines are always the house pouring wine, the welcome wine, or the one on the menu and all that. The wine ban took that out. You'd find them, but they had nothing to offer. So that was like a very bad space of time for the South African wineries. For other imported wines, for me, example, I want more listings at that time. So I want listings to be on the menu, on the chef menu, and we got some of our wines into some spaces that you used to have only South African wines. To me, the South African wine industry contributes about 55 million rand to its GDP. So the alcohol ban obviously had more economical impact than just going beyond what the wine industry in South Africa basically is. You know, it was quite monumental. I spoke to my South African partner, who happens to also be a producer, and they said that it's likely that the 7 out of 10 South African wineries would have to stop operations due to the ban and the effects of the ban on the industry. So, you know, in South Africa, the effect is very mad, it's huge, and Tinashe has better eyes in that market than I do, being a producer itself. But going into Africa, it's quite strange. The first time that we would not see South African wines at the restaurants, at the hotels, and that quite opened some opportunity for producers from Chile, from Italy, from France to get some listing. But I give it over to Tinashe to shed more light on that.
Of South African wines in Africa, probably I'll just call a big bet. So you have to understand that Africa has always been a spirit-based, you know, vodka, gin, brandy, and RTDs like your ciders. So the biggest liquor company in Africa, and probably it's got a share in the world, is Distell. So Distell was big on brandy, liquor, so they had this world distribution network from Cape to Cairo that they were selling these liquor brands, and they would also piggy bank their own brands in their portfolio, which they had the KWVs, the Niederberg, the Durbanville Hills wines. So they just took opportunity of the distribution channel which was created to have at least wines in there. So what you're finding now is because this African market is getting much more mature, very learned, and they're tired of these old South African brands. So outside these distill-owned brands, there's not much South African brands that are known in Africa. So for me, that's where the opportunity lies. And I've seen it firsthand with my wine brand, Kumusha, because the moment I enter into a new African country, they love it because it's something different. It's not something they've used to. And like Tammy has mentioned, because they could land the wines at a cheaper price, they ended up being the glass wines in most hotels. But for me, there's a big opportunity because I've spent time in South Africa and it's that the industry is a bit disorganized. There's no concerted effort to go in there. So there is big opportunity in Africa for alternative brands, which is not this distill. So look at Africa and think of the only wines coming from South Africa going into the mass market in Africa are the distill owned brands. You can go and look up the company, but it is the one which is controlling most of the liquor and alcohol. So if you were to ask me, I think there's a lot of opportunity to bring alternative brands that are quite affordable, that have got a connection and a story to tell. And in terms of COVID, obviously, you know, most wine drinkers, probably expatriates or, you know, people visiting Africa. So the tourism industry across the continent is in shambles because no one is traveling. So there is a reduction in consumption. But the overall consumption of alcohol or wines hasn't stopped, you know. Only South Africa had a liquor ban, but in other places, they still open the tap to sell. So there's also starting to be direct to consumer, people not necessarily eating in restaurants or hotels. So I see potential growth if you just manage beyond getting your products into Africa. But I don't think South Africa has a stronghold on the wine in Africa at all. I'm completely, honestly think they don't have any control as well.
Thank you. Final question as well. Just what is Tammy's social media handle? Because so that we can find him online as well.
Tammy?
Yes. But if what I can't even hear what she said, difficult.
Lan, maybe Lan can say his social media handles.
Yeah, what is the social media handles, Tammy?
So I'm more of a LinkedIn person. It's Akintolatimgo, but it's just my name.
Okay, I will post that later, Renee,
okay.
Because it's I couldn't tag him, so we don't have his name, but we will get that to you. It's Akintola Temi Tope.
Yes.
We just call him Temi, so it's easy for us. But yeah, you know, I have a problem always trying to tag him as well. So that's a good point. But so we have three more speakers left. By the way, if you're interested in understanding what Tinashe has been up to, I think it's incredibly commendable what he's done with his winery. Please support him if you can. I have not had the pleasure, Tinashe, to taste your wine. I hope to do that one day, but his story is just fascinating, and I think what he's done is very important for Africa, Zimbabwe in particular, but I think for Africa. And please go check out his wines. It's called Kumusha. I think he says it Kumusha Wines, KumushaBrands.com. But he's on his profile, so you can get it from his Insta. So we have three more speakers. What I would like to do is the following, because we just have a few more minutes. We will take the questions together from Fabian, Andrea, and Charlene, and then we'll have the panelists reply all together. So let's start with Fabian. What is your question, Fabian, for the panelists?
Hi, Stevie. Hi, Tinashe. Hi, Timmy. I'm going to make it brief. I used to live and work in Norway as head sommelier. So there we used to import wine. And Tinashe had a point on logistic. And actually, one of the biggest logistic working in different countries is with the temperature. So how is it to find good logistic partners when it comes to protecting the wine in Africa? Do you have good partners who can provide service all over the continent, or is it easier and better to find logistic partners for each country?
Great. Andrea Ebi, hi, how are you? Have you got a question for our panelists?
Hi, Stevie, thank you. Yes, I'm just curious if they're seeing an interest in formalized wine education. Is that something that they're seeing a growing interest in?
Oh my God, we had that question. We just didn't ask yet. Okay, so that's great.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. We got a little sidetracked. Charlene, have you got a question for our panelists?
Hi, everybody. Thank you very much. It's Charlene. Yeah, I'm from South Africa. I live in the middle of the winelands, and I drink a lot of wine. I'm in the golf and leisure industry, and I've just... Sorry, I came in at the end of your room. I'm following you more regularly. It's not as much of a question than maybe as a comment. The few comments that I heard about the wine industry in South Africa, because of the lockdown, we are in severe trouble. I mean, we are sitting with 280 million to 300 million liters of wine. And it is not, as I'm speaking, it is harvest time. And yeah, there is big problems. So we really need the support of every person that is on this room to talk about African wine and what we can do with South African wines. If you want to, you can have a look on my profile. There is a communications community network which you guys are more than welcome to use. It's free. I've got all the different wine regions, all the different associations. Everybody's on there. You guys are welcome to use that at no cost if you guys want to communicate offline and network on that as well. That's me, Charlene.
Thank you. I mean, you have a party hat, so I did invite you up. Would you like to ask a question? I mean, you have to unmute. Okay, so that was fun. All right, so let me just review the questions. I think there were two questions. If there were good logistical partners from Fabienne, and then the wine question. So wine education, what is the state of the wine education? And I think with that, we can round up as the last set of questions. We had fun one from Amy, but okay.
All right. In terms of wine education, I think WSET is really making good inroads. And if I'm asked any wine education, being from a professional person or just a normal person wanting to enjoy wine, WSET is the course I always recommend. And they're spreading, I think. And online courses, you know, I think we can utilize areas like Zoom, all this technology we came with you know, the COVID-19 situation can help as well. But there is a desperate need for education, and I don't think there is, you know, formal education outside of Cape Town, South Africa, where the alternatives is Cape Wine Academy. And Fabian, also a sommelier, I think Court of Master Sommelier held their first classes last year in South Africa, and it was growing. Obviously, because of COVID, it affected anything. But I think the major one at the moment has to be WSET. And in terms of logistics, I think, you know, getting it to the ports is still fine. Cape Town Port, Durban Port, Mombasa Port. But I think once it goes the mainland, then, yeah, I'm still having struggles with that. I don't think there is a strategic logistic partner doing containers with proper conditions. Even the warehouses where the wines is landing, I think Temi can attest with me, they're still, you know, in a deplorable condition. But which goes again to say, because there's no education, there's no investment into it. So I'll be the first one to admit that once it's in mainland, yeah, just hope for the best. And this goes to every country, maybe not so much more in South Africa, but in the rest of the continent, it's still a big risk in terms of wine storage and wine transportation. I don't know if there was another question I should have answered.
No, that was just the singer. And Charlene mentioned the network of the South African wine industry, which we will go have a look. Okay, Temi, up to you to close up. I just want to say come back to us tomorrow, 8 p.m. Central European time for Vinito International Academy. Temi.
Okay, so regarding wine education, Tinasha practically nailed it. It's the music and Kip Wine Academy. Kip Wine Academy is really growing into other parts of the continent away from South Africa. Into other parts of the continent. South African wine industry used to have all that done in even in Lagos, Nigeria, but due to the COVID, they had to put a pause on it for a while. So that's that about wine education. As regarding the logistics, please, once you, if you find a partner and you're shipping the wine, make sure the partner gets the ISO kit, the thermal lining to be put in the containers. Imagine shipping the wines here in November, December, temperatures drop to about 2-3 degrees, and then you're shipping it to Lagos and it's about 30 degrees. Now that practically turns your wine into vinegar because the temperature shock is it's quite high and it happens suddenly. So get the thermal lining, that protects the temperature inside the container, it keeps it cool before you get to the port. At the port, the containers are still transported with the thermal lining to the warehouse where the wines are going to be deposited. The state of the warehouse, I think this is one of the things that I do when I get hold of a new partner. I tell you to send me the pictures of your warehouse because I'm 100%, if the wine does not get to the final consumer at the right quality, it's not a sale. It's not a sale for me. It must get to the final consumer at the right quality. That's what calls for the repeated purchase. I'm not interested in just winning clients. I'm more interested in keeping clients. So it is for me. That repeated sale is really the business. Selling the container of wine is practically no work. Can you sell another one? That's where the question comes. And that has to be about selling the right quality of the wine. The wine has to be optimal quality. So please, ISO kits are very important. See the pictures of the warehouse. Make sure it's in the right state for your wine. And for me, that's how I solve my logistic issues. And
where else? Great, Temi. That's such a great conclusion. Thank you very much, Tinasha. Thank you very much, Temi. Join with us for the next time. I hope you guys learned something. And check out also the podcast to get a little bit deeper dive into Africa wine market. See you guys next week, Wednesday, 2 p.m.
Listen to the Italian Wine Podcast wherever you get your podcasts. We're on SoundCloud, Apple Podcasts, Himalaya FM, and more. Don't forget to subscribe and rate the show. If you enjoy listening, please consider donating through ItalianWinePodcast.com. Any amount helps cover equipment, production, and publication costs. Until next time, cin cin.